Your answer isn't racist either way.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking about Sinners, the new film by Ryan Coogler, and our special guest, Duck Washington, is here to help us spoil the entire film. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it and come back.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Molly Glover.
I didn't realize they were twins for a minute.
And Nick Glover.
Hey, everybody. I happen to like Irish music sometimes.
Wow. And we are also joined by our fabulous guest, Duck Washington, who's been with us before. Welcome back, Duck.
Thanks. It's great to be here again.
And we are here to talk about the movie Sinners. Now, before we go into it, this is definitely something where I'm going to say there will be spoilers aplenty. Spoilers aplenty. If you haven't seen this movie and you would like to see this movie and you don't want it spoiled, then don't listen to this podcast. That's just the way it is. Otherwise, stick around. Stick around. We'll have a nice discussion about this movie. And it'll be fine because you've already seen it and it won't have been spoiled for you. So that's I think, enough time.
And you should see it.
It's worth the wait. It's worth waiting
go see
to
it.
Go see it it's and then good. Wait to listen to our stupid show yeah. about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, because it is a stupid show about a really good movie.
Yes.
And it is a really good movie. So let's jump into it. Sinners is a... gosh, I would actually classify it as a musical as well as a horror film.
It is a comedy horror musical period piece.
Yeah, yeah, just about every kind of movie it can be. A romance.
A musical because it has music in it and being performed in it?
I think the music plays such a big part. Huh? Like the music is a role. Oh. To some. The well, music is a character.
I mean, but like when I saw the Bob Dylan biopic, it has yeah. tons of music in it, but I definitely wouldn't have called it a musical.
Yeah.
I guess I feel like specifically because the music seems to have such an effect on the plot, mm-hmm. like the way, like especially like when the vampires come in, you know, and like the way the vampires are singing and the way that the juke joint being a music hall and all, I don't know, maybe not a musical, maybe a musical movie.
All right, I respectfully disagree in the sense yeah. that I think because the music drives the action, that it can be classified as a musical. I mean, we don't need to spend a lot of time on this. There's a lot to talk about this movie. Arguing over whether or not it's a musical probably is not where we need to spend our time.
Yeah.
Suffice it to say, the music in this movie is fantastic, and I really appreciate the way the music is integrated into the action in a way that as a person who, if he was a D&D character, would be a bard, and I think that this movie, in a strange way, is about bards.
Sure,
I appreciated it. So
yeah, there's some music magic going yeah. on.
Can I talk a little bit about the music while
you
we're
absolutely can.
The composer of this movie is Ludwig Göransson, who I'm an absolutely huge fan of. I'm a big movie score nut. I don't know if anybody knows that.
I do know that about you.
Yeah.
I've seen your posts. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm an audio designer as well as doing a lot of other things in theater. But I host a movie scores panel at Convergence every year.
I'll be on at Convergence this year. So there you go. Ooh. Oh, no, not the score panel. It's a different one.
I was like, I had no idea that was happening. but I often talk about Ludwig Göransson. You know, he does, since his arrival on the scene, he's done some really incredible work. He's done Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Fruitvale Station, The Mandalorian, The Book of Boba Fett, Oppenheimer. He's like the new hotness as far as film scoring goes. And he and Ryan Coogler, who directed this movie, like have been working together since they were in college.
Oh wow.
And so like he's basically done, I think, every movie Ryan Coogler's directed. You know, and I remember when I saw Black Panther and I was like, what? A white dude?
I was just pulling it up because I'm like, Ludwig Göransson, yeah. There's no way, but maybe.
he's like Swedish, right?
I think he grew up in the States, but I think he might be.
He's Swedish.
Yeah.
Yeah. According to Wikipedia.
Well,
yeah. I'm not a person who pays a lot of attention to scores. That's just not something that usually hits me, other than like when I can tell when music's boring, I guess. Mm-hmm. I know what I like and I know what I don't like. Other than that, I don't have a lot of skill in that. But this movie's score, I felt it. Like I seriously, there were points where I'm like, Jesus, the music is just killing me good. It was so good.
It's so intelligent in that it not only like you have that big score moment, right, where they pay the big piece that attracts all the vampires,
mm-hmm.
where it crosses across all of these different cultures, mm-hmm. and histories and futures. It's such a complex piece of music that happens there.
Yeah.
That at first my audio brain was like, this is too much. This is too much stimulation. I was really appreciative. Like on second viewing, I was like, I can track a little bit more what's happening now.
Yeah.
It made me feel like I was on drugs. That scene, legitimately. I seriously was just like rocked back in my seat. Yeah. Just it was happening to me.
I feel like it made the vampires feel like they were on drugs too.
Well, that's the whole thing about that. Yeah. I just saw that
music is
Ludwig
drug.
Worked with, he's the producer for Childish Gambino on Camp, Because the Internet, and Awaken My Love.
Oh, sure.
Fucking A. Sure. Yeah, that's great. Those are great records. Yeah,
that's great. And I know Kendrick Lamar had a lot to do with the Black Panther soundtrack, so I'm assuming they worked mm-hmm. together a bunch too.
Well, and he's also partnered with Childish Gambino on like a ton of stuff. So This Is America is
oh sure,
you know, that's like you know, like his like working, you know, along mm-hmm. like side by side.
Yeah,
I would like to, returning to the movie a second, I want to explain why I said at the very beginning. So at the very beginning of the movie, when they're like, are you two twins? And he says, we're cousins. I was like, oh no, are they not both Michael B. Jordan? And then I'm like, Molly, oh no, in my head. And then later I'm like, no, that's definitely, and then it's like, they are twins. I'm like, God damn it. It was just this like moment of like, oh no, what am I doing? I don't have my glasses. But it was, that first opening scene of just, you boys twins, cousins, was just such a, it sets up, it's one word, and it just so elegantly to me sets up their relationship together, the playfulness they have, the way they like to fuck with white people, just the way they, just the whole thing felt, it was like one word and it just set the tone perfectly.
It was hilarious to me in that opening segment because I very frequently watch a show called Corridor Crew where they like they watch virtual effects in like Comet. I just recently watched an episode where they were talking about like clones or like duplicates or things in film, and how difficult it is when you have one person manipulating an object and handing it to another person who's mm-hmm, the same person.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so to see that movie start and have them immediately passing a cigarette back and forth, mm-hmm. you know, where you have the complexities of the smoke mm-hmm. and like the intricacies of it's a delicate item. I was like, this is a flex. This movie is starting with a flex.
And it's a flex for people who know. Yeah. That's the best part. Sure. If you don't know, like me, or, you know, you're just like, oh, damn, that's cool. But like, if you know how hard it is, you're like, oh my God. Yeah, that's great.
And it's a whole very in-character thing about one of them is always doing the rolling mm-hmm. for the other.
Mm-hmm.
You get a good like touch point later in the film with them, with that moment happening again and then not happening again too, is just pretty great, I thought.
Well, one of the last movies we reviewed was Brave New World, and one of the complaints I had was that in that movie they said literally everything they were doing. Everything got explained. It was like it seemed like it was a movie for people on their phones who aren't actually watching the movie. This movie was the complete opposite. I felt like so much was shown and demonstrated with very elegant, like spare dialogue or very gestures or small moments between characters, that was just, this movie, I couldn't stop thinking about this movie for days afterward. I couldn't stop. On the way home, I just kept going, God damn, that was good.
do any of you know if I couldn't find this online, if the Sammy, if he's actually playing and singing for the parts where he's doing it?
Yep.
Fuck.
I knew it had to be his voice.
Because it looked like it, but damn. Yeah,
I couldn't have said. I mean, the guitar, I could tell that he was playing the guitar, and there's no guarantee he was as good at the guitar as it sounded, but he clearly had some knowledge of how to play. The guy who played Old Sammy, too, clearly could.
He's a famous blues musician. I should hope so.
Guess 1 year Miles Caton, who plays that character, was born.
Oh, no.
2005.
Yeah.
And he first came to national prominence on the show Little Big Shots, that Steve Harvey talent show.
Oh, sure.
In 2018. That wasn't that long ago. Yeah. I remember we had been doing the podcast for 6 years. Oh, man. He's great. He's going to have a huge future.
The difference in him when he's not playing and when he's playing, it's like two different people. It's really amazing.
But yeah, I was gonna say, Old Sammy is Buddy Guy.
Yeah. There you go.
a famous blues musician.
Like, I think a friend of ours who's big into folk and blues was saying that he's kind of considered like the last link of the to legendary blues musicians. He's like the final guy that's kind of a connection to that era.
And apparently Buddy Guy has said that being in this movie was like a dream come true. Oh. And his hope is that this movie will, spark new passions for people's love of blues. Which I can totally see. I know 9 zillion people who are like, I gotta get this soundtrack. Hopefully that does inspire more people to listen to the blues.
I 2 days later, Molly was pulling up one or two songs from the movie on the car.
I didn't realize Haley Steinfeld has a song on the soundtrack. Oh, yeah. She sang.
I think it's in the credits.
Yeah. But still, she sang a song for it.
She can sing. She's got albums out besides that, I think.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
I'm not a big music nerd. Like, I listen to music. I try to get exposed to a lot of new music and always kind of like grow what I'm listening to. But one thing that I feel like was like even I noticed in that regard was when Remick the vampire finally gets like close to Sammy or in near proximity or gets his hands on him. The music that comes in real loud is rock and roll. And I felt like it was like, this is what happens when like white people get their hands on blues is you get rock and roll. That's what comes in. And I can't imagine it wasn't deliberate, or maybe I'm seeing something that wasn't there.
No, it's very much there. I don't know. I can't remember a movie that I've seen that's so vividly been a metaphor, right? Yeah. This movie was a metaphor of appropriation.
Oh yeah.
In the extreme.
Yeah.
All the way down to the Irish people being like, we're like you.
Yeah. But they find this identity and immediately there are these vampires there to suck it away and take it for themselves,
Let me just say, as a musician who plays Irish music, they have their own music and it's good. I mean, some of those, when they're playing Rocky Road to Dublin, that's a banging version of that song.
Poor
Robin
for sure.
Clean was a crazy, little, their harmonies on it, where it's like, go do your own thing. Go be someone else.
It's like they don't need his music. And that's exactly the point, right? It's like you've got music. You've got your own music. Well, you don't need his music.
But it's not just the music, it's taking it and stripping it and adding it and making it a part of what they are. Like, it doesn't keep its uniqueness. It doesn't keep its identity. Mm-hmm. It becomes vampire music, right? Right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I feel like it, to me, it feels like a difference between, using, playing, enjoying, and then like just appropriating, owning, and like removing the identity or culture from
demanding to be allowed into spaces.
Oh yeah,
that was the thing that was like, oh, so y'all are racist here? You're not letting white people in? It was like, come on, man! Like, come on! Like, that's so bullshit. It
was, all the stuff about them being invited in was very enjoyable to me.
Yeah, I really liked that as that becoming a very instant thing with the black vampires, right? Where they come over and be like, why don't you just let me in? Why don't you just let me in? Like,
just step aside and invite me in.
Since when do you need to be invited to go anywhere, cornbread? And it's just it's like, nah, this is sus.
Right away.
This is sus.
I feel like maybe white people in that same era would have been not as keen.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like, why aren't these white people just pushing their way in? Like, why aren't they just barging in? Why are they making it so that we have to say they can come? That seems weird. That's weird. Yeah. I love that Smoke and Stack are named Elijah and I can't remember the other one's name. It's not Elias, is it? They're real similar.
I don't remember.
They're real similar first names. And I remember thinking that I wonder how they got Smoke and Stack, but I'm guessing it's from the war. You know, since they both went to the war. Yeah.
I'm not sure because
Elijah and Elias,
they got referred to as the Smokestack twins by people who knew them before they went away to the war.
Maybe, yeah.
Is it that they knew them before they went to the war, or is it because they knew them before they went to Chicago?
Hard to say.
Sure. The description in Wikipedia, by the way, is Elijah Smoke Moore and Elias Stackmore, criminal twin brothers.
That feels accurate to me.
The evil twin brothers, dun, dun, leaders dun. Of the Crimson Gardener. What has a scar on his face?
I really love, I'm probably going to butcher her name, but Wunmi Mosaku, we've seen her in a bunch of stuff on the BBC, and she's fantastic. She's in Lovecraft Country. She plays Ruby Baptiste.
Yeah. She's in Loki.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She's Hunter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I didn't even think about it with her shorter hair. I didn't even.
There's a lot of Marvel actors in this movie.
She is just an absolute force. I love her, and she was great in this movie. Like, I was worried that she was going to be played as almost like a foil to the protagonists, wanting, you know, been her being like, oh, she's the wife, and she won't, you know, let them do anything. But it wasn't like that at all. And that line with if your magic is so real, then how come it didn't? You know, how come you couldn't save our baby? And her just going, I don't know, was like, she didn't try to explain it. There wasn't anything like, oh, I didn't do it or nothing like that. Just, I don't know. And that was that I really appreciated a lot. It was really some just, again, that elegant, spare dialogue that says so much without a ton of words explaining everything.
Well, and one of the things I also really appreciate about her being in this role in this movie, too, is she is an actress of a particular shape that isn't traditionally allowed to be sexy. You know, as a larger black woman. I really was like, represent.
She's a romantic lead, right?
Yeah.
Because there's romance in this movie too. Yes. Genre busting to hell movie. It's like they're trying to pigeonhole it into a single genre is really unfair to the film. But I mean, she's a romantic lead that you don't think of as a romantic lead, and that's perfect. It's really well done that they didn't try to put her into a particular role because of who she is and her size and her shape. This movie did that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked. I really enjoyed the just a little bit of. I don't know. Pearlene was great. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, every character was fully developed. You just understood kind of the directing and the writing were so great that I understood instantly so much about every character without it having to be a shit ton of exposition or, you know, clumsy sentences like, well, ever since you came back from the war, you've been different, you know, or whatever. It's like, yeah, no shit. It was World War One. I'm aware. Everybody came back different. Yeah. We don't need to say that. Like, but yeah, it was, and I really, the energy shift that happens when those white people knock on the door, and it just feels like this beautiful soap bubble they had that was like this perfect, the dream of the juke joint just pops. And everything after that just starts to feel like ruined. Even if they had closed the door and nothing had happened and they hadn't.
If they weren't vampires.
And if the well-meaning white lady hadn't been like, I'll go talk to them and gone out to talk to them to try to help.
Now let's be clear. She isn't a white lady.
That's true. She's not a white lady.
Yeah, no.
But she's using her white presenting privilege to go talk to these white people to try to get them to just go home.
Yes. And I just wanted to clarify that there's a difference between being a well-meaning white lady and being someone who's actually been accepted as part of their family.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's a really good distinction.
And I know that this movie has been a really huge point of growth in Hailee Steinfeld's like embracing her minority status. Mm-hmm, it's really cool for me being a multiracial person to I don't really see a lot of multiracial people in cinema playing multiracial.
Sure.
Right. Which is just like a cool dynamic to kind of like land in and explore. But yeah, just kind of awesome and powerful.
I had no idea about that, about her
until
this movie, and coming out of the theater and later being like, I wonder, like, I hope.
There's no way they would have.
You look at the rest of the movie and you're like, there's no way they don't cast a mixed race actress to play a mixed race character, right? The rest of the movie makes it pretty clear. There is no way they would have done that.
You hope for the best. I wasn't about to, like, criticize Ryan Coogler on who he casts in his movie in any way. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not in a position to.
And he didn't cast twins to play twins, so fuck that.
Well, and I don't know. Like I feel like I have more of an eye, so, like, I can look at Hailee Steinfeld and be like, yep.
Sure.
I can look at Jennifer Beals and be like, yep.
Yeah.
You know, but definitely people who typically are much more white passing in their lives.
But she goes out to try to like see if they can make them go on their way and be like, just see sense. And if that had, even if that hadn't happened, I feel like the energy of the night was gone. Yeah. Like it was just wrecked. And it just really shows how like even just white people trying to gain access and demanding access, even if it's not given, can just like wreck the vibe, you know? And again, something shown and not told, something just really just demonstrated in that movie.
I think maybe, you know, not well-meaning white lady, but person who is probably like from the story she tells about her family connection and all of that, is probably used to being an intermediary and a mediator and a person that's connecting people that are segregated at this point. And I feel like that's, see that about her in this.
Well, she's married to a white man.
Well, and I think in her real life, she doesn't get to be an intermediary.
No.
She has to hide. Yeah. She has to pretend like she's not black.
Yeah.
She has to just be like, I'm white. I'm your white wife. These are our white. Mm-hmm. This is our white family. This is our white business. Like for her to reveal that part of her is danger is like. It's like a death sentence, right?
Yeah,
so she probably doesn't really get to lobby on behalf of black people like almost ever.
Yeah. Like something more when she was young, but not as an adult anymore, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean obviously she grew up with these two boys.
Right.
You know, but eventually got sent away to go be white so that maybe she could have a quote unquote better life, which isn't what she wanted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Which is why she's like, no, I love you. You're my family. Why aren't I with you? Which is cool. It's a cool dynamic.
Speaking of actually white people in this movie, though, that Klan guy getting shot with the automatic weapon over and over was pretty fucking great.
The Klan massacre at the end was definitely very satisfying for me as a white person.
Mercy, mercy. I laughed so hard. I laughed so loud for so long that I felt almost like someone's probably, like the whole theater was like howling at that point. Yeah. Very happy to see this dude just get absolutely jacked.
I'm glad they had that little button on the end. I enjoyed that.
When they said, do we need the trunk? And said, I don't think we need the trunk yet. Immediately I was like, oh, the trunk's coming out.
That's a World War I trunk.
That's Chekhov's trunk.
That trunk's coming out.
Have any of you heard about the interesting things about the rights and the things in Ryan Coogler's contract for this movie?
I have heard a little bit, yeah. No, it's pretty awesome.
What have you heard?
So I've heard that that he negotiated that after, I think it's after 25 years, that the rights to the film go back to him. So Ooh. Then he'll be the actual owner. Huh. He also gets like, I think a percentage stake in some like merch. It's like, it almost feels like a George Lucas Star Wars
yeah,
contract
right. yeah.
In some aspects. And I know a lot of the studios are like harumphing about it, yeah. right? Because he's got like, oh, this movie's successful and this guy has all this power, harumph, harumph.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like right. so much so that like when the first like box office figures came out, like even though they were like incredibly good,
yeah.
they're like, oh, this movie is still like, we don't know. It's only made $40 million off of its $90 million budget. And then like Ben Stiller was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Like,
are you crazy? Like no movie opening like it's just like one of the best openings for like a rated R movie ever,
let and alone about vamp like a horror
and,
movie
yeah. and we're talking degree. About this movie I think a month after it's
yeah
after and it's open and it's currently it's still playing
and it's currently the second highest grossing movie of the year so far.
Yeah, movies don't have legs anymore, right? They get about 2 weeks mm-hmm. of solid box office and they don't stick around. So
yes.
this movie is doing something that a lot of movies don't do, which is it has staying power. People mm-hmm. are wanting to go see it in the theater. And that's something pretty special. I mean, it's silly that they're even complaining about it. I mean, 25 years, most of its money making yeah. mm-hmm. will have been completed in 25
years. And it's like over, I think it's like $240 million now, like in its earnings. it's like decrease, like each week has been so minuscule. It's Minecraft and then it's
yeah.
Sinners.
You're just talking about domestic, right? You're not even talking about international.
It's worse internationally because black films don't work as well internationally.
Right. I'm just saying that whatever they're making here is just part of it, and even if they're not making as much internationally, they've made more than $240 million.
100%.
Minecraft is a big fucking franchise for $1 billion, you know, game owned mm-hmm. by Microsoft and all that shit. So it's remarkable. Another part of Coogler's deal for this was he got final cut approval.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So he got to make the movie he wanted. He got to have it edited and presented the way he wanted. And that's another thing that studios were like, I don't know.
They're I don't all know about this. Want this.
Does
yeah.
he?
Yeah, that's it exactly. But if he wants this, then other people might want it too.
But you
he
know
made
what?
A good fucking movie.
Yeah, you wouldn't have made that movie in a studio.
Does he own, certainly not. Does he own the property? And by the property I mean does he own the characters and the world, I think so.
He gets licensing, merchandising, and streaming rights in 25 years. He gets all rights to the film, it sounds like, which is remarkable and maybe the way it just should be.
If
someone's like a writer director and it's their movie and they made their movie, maybe they should just get their rights back at a certain point in time. Like it should just go to them.
It should. It's kind of amazing that mm-hmm. they did this. It's interesting. I wonder why that happened. But
because he's got clout. Because he's got momentum right now.
Yeah.
He made Creed when he was like $200,000 in debt, and that was not that long ago.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I think too is that because he made one of the best Marvel movies that got so much acclaim, people know his name.
Yeah.
Like people actually do know his name and so when you see like there's a new Ryan Coogler movie, it's like, oh fuck, that's going to be great.
Auteur of note.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and when you think about it, like that Black Panther movie was the first movie a black director made that cost like more than $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was, if you've seen that movie, or I've never seen it, but there was a movie called Monster Trucks about like a kid and his truck that like was alive.
Uh-huh.
That cost more money than any black director had ever made. Until Black Panther.
Almost combined. Yeah. But the reason I bring it up is like, I would love it if he controlled the property. And this is a standalone film. It doesn't need a sequel. It doesn't need it doesn't need any split off movies. But can I say for the record, I want a movie about the vampire hunting Native Americans.
Oh my God, the Choctaw vampire hunters.
Yeah,
that we get zero explanation for, and that's so fucking
and
rad.
And they're just gone. And then
they're
just
gone. They don't come back. They don't. They're like
fucking with this shit.
They don't fuck. Yeah. They don't fuck with vampires.
All right, we tried. Well,
yeah.
I really I would also watch like an Apple TV show or like a well produced TV show that follows Mary and Stack in their vampire like as a vampire couple, you know, because like them showing up and being like putting down the glasses and being like, hey there, Sammy, like, oh baby, we missed you, and everything's just like, fuck, like, wait, the way Buddy Guy did such a good job of being like, okay.
do one episode every decade,
right,
to get them to modern day.
Some What We Do in the Shadow shit.
I just want a little standalone story about them that doesn't have to be,
because they look like they're having a good time. They looked very happy and very enjoying in love, and it was actually a pretty sweet ending for people who got, I mean, these
they're dead and loving it.
I remember wanting to talk about I wanted to talk about these vampires, because this is a little different with the vampire lore than any other vampire thing I've ever seen or read. In that they had a hive mind.
Oh yeah.
Which you do not get. I've never seen like a hive
that's
mind.
That's not a standard and vampire.
A master vampire, a head vampire, yes, for sure.
But like but I've also never seen vampires where they are not, instead they are all happier, and they none of them, and like the way that it was drawn parallels between like, you are black in America in 1930s, and this is freedom, this is true freedom, this is true power and true freedom, and it's so sweet, and you just got a taste just coming in, and like they all seem so happy. So often you see vampires as being like tortured, or they're like, they have this, they're like, now I'm a monster, or I have an unending hunger, and I hate myself. Instead, every single one of them, when they got turned, was like, this is great. The one guy who got caught outside, they were like, get in here, and he got caught, and then he like wakes up and he's like looking around and he's like, fuck, you look so good, you look so happy, and they were like, right, come on. And it just that
sinister
was, it was great.
Cause extra
like,
sinister.
Yeah, because like that, you could almost feel like somebody being like, I mean, okay, you know, like, and agreeing to it. And that is, to me, just like the best thing of vampires, is it should feel like something you want. Not because you, not like, you know, like Guillermo, or like, you know, that kind of thing, and What We Do in the Shadows, where they're like, you know, weird kids who feel like losers. This was, and again, I know I'm keep coming back to this, but shown the sweetness of the freedom, the true freedom that we all know isn't going to happen otherwise.
Says equality. We can all be equal.
This is true equality, and we all are the same.
You know, the clan members who he turns at the beginning of the movie, they're like, we don't hate black people anymore.
Right?
You know?
We just all hate humans. We're just vampires. Yeah. That was a very cool thing that I thought was particularly interesting. I'm a huge horror aficionado, and I've loved vampires since I was very small, so but it was very good.
They kept sunlight, they kept garlic, they obviously
steaks.
Being invited in was a big part, steaks.
Yep.
Like everything else is fairly traditional.
Yeah.
But the easy way out, like if all of those other rules were standing, somebody should have just thrown some rice on the floor.
Right.
Should have counted those grains.
Yeah, goddamn. When you were posting about it, you saw it a second time before we saw it the first time, but you were like, I usually don't see a movie a second time so soon after seeing it the first time. That was the endorsement that made us go see it a little bit faster, a little bit sooner than we would have beforehand. So thank you for posting about it.
Yeah,
I'm really glad we saw it in the theater.
We saw it at the Alamo Draft House.
Okay.
And so they had an incredible pre-show for this movie.
They always do.
Yes. And so I don't know if you noticed, but there's a couple places in Sinners where the blood, the fake blood, is like a very pale pink.
Kind of an orangish.
Almost like an orangish pale pink that kind of stands out. That is a nod to some previous early black horror movies that specifically like use this like pinkish kind of of blood that, and it's so it they showed that in the thing, and they were like, Ryan Coogler drew a lot of inspiration from these previously black directed horror movies, and here's one of them. And they showed the scene, and I remember watching the pre-show going, oh, that blood looks so weird. Oh, it's old. It's an old movie. Oh, they got old, weird, fake blood. And then I saw it again. I'm like, well, I would never have known. I'm like, that's such a little great detail.
They talked a lot about the history of like black horror
and blaxploitation horror. And
blaxploitation horror. They talked about Blackula and
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the black one. I think it's like
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Black or something like that.
It's
not stellar. But then they talked about a lot of like small independent, like black created horror movies that weren't very commonly known that were like the ones that Molly's talking about.
It was a really great pre-show.
It was such a great pre-show.
If you can go see it at the Alamo, that's where I would go if you were going to see it again.
Well, I mean, I think the Alamo is great for a lot of things, but I know that there was a lot of passion about people seeing this movie. It was filmed in an IMAX format. And I know there was a lot of push to like really have people go see it in that format. I saw it both in IMAX and Dolby Digital.
Did you see it at the Science Museum?
I saw it at Roseville. There's no true IMAX in Minnesota anymore.
Not even at the Science Museum?
No, the Science Museum is an Omni Theater. Yeah.
Oh.
The only true IMAX that we had was at the Minnesota Zoo, but that closed
a long time ago. That's the one I meant.
Pre-pandemic, I think.
Yeah, well, pre-pandemic.
I was picturing the zoo and saying the Science Museum. I
saw an interview or a featurette to promote the movie that was just Ryan Coogler talking about the differences between 35mm, 16mm, 8mm, IMAX, how IMAX is the same film that they use, like 270 or whatever it is for most films, but it's turned sideways, so they use the width of the film for their cells instead of the height wise. Like everything I know about IMAX format is from him talking about Sinners and how they filmed it so passionately. This guy is a real fucking nerd. Like it's great to see him so passionate about it.
Well, and it was new for him, right? He had never filmed in IMAX before. I saw that he if you look at the credits, there's special thanks to Christopher Nolan because he was like, what do I do with this IMAX camera? And Christopher Nolan was like, let's hook up. Let's figure out how to do what you want to do.
He, in the same video, he's talking about how, they figured out how to get like 5 or 10 theaters in the United States to play it on IMAX film, like actually playing it on film. And then how they were like 5 theaters in the world that were playing it on IMAX film in the wider IMAX format as well. And like he's talking about like getting it to play on film at a theater in Oakland where he used to go see movies as a kid too, was like, you could tell he was very, very proud of that. It was a really sweet moment.
Yeah, I would have loved to see that. I saw it also at the AMC because it was easier. I actually only watched it yesterday.
Oh shit.
But I saw it on not even like a Dolby Digital screen, and it was a little dark at times. And
whoa, yikes. Hey, whoa, Tim.
and I like the Dolby Digital projectors usually when you've got the darker lighting like that are much sharper than what I saw, and that's kind of frustrating.
That's another reason we like to go to the Draft House.
Yeah, the Draft House has way better projectors.
Yeah, it's worth the drive. Honestly, I just the seats are more comfortable. You're further away from people. The sound and I don't even have to wear my hearing aids when I go to the Draft House.
I usually see things. I try to see things pretty quick. The Dolby projections at AMC are pretty dope.
Yeah, they are pretty.
And
good.
The sound is real dope in there.
I've got AMC A-list. So
yeah, I do three
movies a week, which I
it's
never.
Four now.
Is it for? Well, it doesn't matter.
It just went up.
I don't ever do three.
Please
so.
Come to the theater, please.
I'll take it off.
I need to use it a lot more than I have been. Let's just put it that way. So I was like, shit, I never use it. So I will just use it. Even though I wanted to go see it. at the Draft House. Anyway, it's
it was a great movie.
Yeah, we've talked about this movie for half its running length almost so far.
Molly, you said it's a rare perfect movie.
I did. I do think it is a rare perfect movie. I think it's a fucking perfect movie. I can't think of a single flaw. I sat for days afterward. I was trying to think if there was even a single moment where I was like, oh, that I didn't like that, or I think that could have been better, or that dialogue was a little clunky, and there wasn't a single moment where I wasn't just wrapped.
If there was anything about it that wasn't perfect, I was too dazzled by everything else to notice or care.
I didn't even go to the bathroom. I dehydrated myself specifically so I wouldn't have to go to the bathroom during this movie, and I was so glad I did.
That's like the highest praise in a movie for Mom.
It's true.
Duck, I will give you the opportunity to say whatever, to have the last word on Sinners before we sign off.
Oh, geez.
I should have warned you ahead of time.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think that historically that there is a resistance to black filmmakers and black film. And I'm really thrilled to see this one get the spotlight and the light of day. You know, I mean, I think that there's groundwork that's been laid. You know, I think that, you know, Jordan, the success of Jordan Peele's, you know, Get Out, mm-hmm. You know, like kind of like laid the foundation for a movie like this to exist, where we can have a horror movie that stars different brown bodies, even some Asian bodies. I should also say that it's really cool, like the way that they approach those characters as well. There was like a specific API like consultant, mm-hmm. to like make sure that they were trying to as accurately as possible represent the lives of those people who really existed in the, you know, mm-hmm. in the South at that time. But just like so many different kinds of bodies, mixed bodies, black bodies, big bodies, small bodies,
yep.
young bodies, old bodies, sober bodies, drunk bodies. It's just really kind of special. And I hope that we get more. I hope that whatever Ryan Coogler wants to do next, he gets to do. I know he's already planning on doing the X-Files, which is which is going to be pretty interesting.
A X-Files movie?
I don't know if it's a movie or I think it's a series. I know he's already been having conversations with Gillian Anderson. We'll see what that. But he's like, yeah, that's my next thing is X Files. So,
fuck, I haven't heard. I haven't heard that. That's amazing.
All right. Well, thank you, Duck, for those final words. Yeah. Sinners, great movie. If you haven't seen it and you listened to us the whole way through, yeah, we did spoil it. But don't worry. You'll love it anyway I was like, yeah, we talked about this movie a lot and didn't really talk about it in a way that would ever get you ready for it. So just fucking go see the movie.
We didn't even talk about the religious aspects.
I know. We didn't even,
I know.
We didn't. And on Geeks Without God, we didn't even bring up the this movie starts and ends in church. All right, we're gonna catch you next time. Thanks, Duck, for joining us. Really appreciate having you here. And we've been Geeks Without God. We'll catch you around.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, Duck, you want to let us join your podcast?
Join us.
Let us merge.
No, thanks, guys.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
This is such bullshit. Yeah.